Okay, so we can start right away, but we should put the palms together. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.
Put your palms down. Today I would like to wrap up on what we talk about meditation. As a conclusion. And then maybe next time when we meet again, we can start something new. Meditation, let's get back to it again. We as an individual, cosmic existence includes existence of course, in the six paths of reincarnations, the three vicious realms and the three non-vicious realms. The three non-vicious realms will be heavenly beings, asura beings, human beings, and the three vicious realms, victims of hell, ghosts, realms, and animal realms. Now, we are living, every individual is living within the 18 realms, we call it. When we're interacting with the outside, we have six organs. Eyes, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. In here is the brain, we call it the brain. The body is a very conclusive concept. It means not just of the body, it means all the organs inside us. So although it is six organs, but actually it's numerous organs, but the conspicuous ones, the ones that are very influential, are the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and brain, and the mind. The six organs, when the six organs in our daily lives, every minute of it, every daily life, every minute of it, interact with the six objects, eye with matter, ear with sound, nose with smell, tongue with taste, body with touch. Here, touch doesn't just mean the bodily touch, it means the touches of all the organs, the interaction of all the organs. And the brain interact with mental objects, which means that the brain may create images. When you are closing your eyes or nose or ears and you are in the imagination, you're creating illusions. So it is mental objects. When this happens, the six consciousnesses will be created in the interaction, the eyes, the ear, the nose, tongue, body, and the manas consciousness, the six consciousness. Why do we have to know these? Because if you don't know, you are living in the 18 realms, you cannot understand Buddhism. Because Buddhism is not about worshiping, getting blessings and all that. It's about studying you in relation to the world, you in relation to all individuals, you in relation to time and space. So you really know who you are, you really know how have you been creating karmic energy that you bind yourself in the bondage of reincarnation. Now in this 18 realms, we're living in 18 realms, and if we are using the five skentas, the five aggregates to analyze it, that the body and the mind, the body, matter, and the mind is perception, conception, volition, and consciousness. So all these, all the deeds, speech, and thoughts expressed through body, mouth, the mouth is to speak, the mind, creating karma. So what we have been doing is, we have been creating karmic energy in every thought, every action, every speech. We well understand all these, But we're still living in the bondage. It's just like we understand that going to casinos and gamble and lose all your money is not right, but when you're addicted to it, you just continue to do it. You know that taking drugs, intoxicants are not right, but when you're addicted to it, you continue to do it. You know that overwhelm yourself, involve yourself with sensual pleasures or relationships, you know it's not that right, because there's a lot of side effects created from it. You know it, but you still want to do it. And you know that blindly acquiring wealth, by all means, even hurting other people, even stealing, killing, lying, you know those are not right, but some people don't even know about these. But you still keep on doing it. Why? Because you are in that chain of reaction that you can get rid of. The Buddha has been telling us to cut the chains. Can you do it? When you read the book, you say, okay, I'm going to do it. But you just simply cannot. When jealousy comes up in you, you still become jealous. Hatred, anger, you can't break the chain. You need training. You need understanding. You need vipassana. You need prajna to change all this. You can select not to change. You can select change. And most people don't even know there should be changes. And most people select the non-change. They just go on with their life, seeking for pleasures and fame and reputations and wealth, just as all the others are doing. And then they roll into reincarnation and reincarnation. And when they have sufferings, they just cry, they just become emotional. That's what we call ignorance. You don't do anything about it. You just react with your emotions when problems, when sufferings, when sickness, when death comes up. You just react with emotion. You're not seeking methods to do something about it. Right now, the Buddha's teaching is, look, you really have to do something about it. Not just haphazardly. You have to do it with exertion, with diligence. You have to do it every day. And the Buddha gave us methods. One of the methods is meditation. Train yourself to break that chain of thought through meditation. First of all, know yourself. So that's meditation. Now, all these, getting back to the PowerPoint, is creating karmic energy, and it creates unwholesome karma, leads to the three vicious realms when you die. Wholesome karma leads to the three non-vicious realms when you die. The three vicious realms will be hell realms, ghost realms, and animal realms. And according to the Buddhist teaching, most, if not all, who live, roll into the three vicious realms. They kill every day. You're supporting killing. You're still a meat eater. You still struggle to get fame and reputation. In the process, you're hurting a lot of people. You're still operating, I don't know, businesses that are hurting people. You're still being jealous. You have hatred. You're revengeful. So you are creating your own destiny. So you lead yourself to hell. You lead yourself to ghosts, and you lead yourself to animals. And you continue to kill animals. You continue to hunt, to fish. You continue to do that. And you continue to involve in sensual relationships, which bind you in this karma world, the world with sensuous pleasures, which is the lower stratum of cosmic existence. And you find that's pleasurable. But Buddha said that's just the opposite. That's the reason why you're born into this world. And some people call them love. We love each other. Love is a many splendid thing. Love, it's that better than me. Okay, so if you are in the non-vicious realms because of your good, wholesome karmic energy, you could be in heaven in your next life. You could be in asuras, which is still heavenly bodies, heavenly sentient beings, but with a temperament. And then you can be in the human's realm. Even in the human's realm, All humans are different. Some were born into rich families, some in the poor families, some born in a developed countries, some in undeveloped countries, and some form of defects of the body, defects of the mind, and a lot of inequalities. Nobody gives these inequalities to you. You carry them yourselves. So these, you have to understand all these before you can meditate, right? So how do we change? We restrict our talk to how do we change this. We want to have the right mindfulness, the right thought. In the Sanskrit language, we call it satipatthana. Sati means the thought, patthana means the right one, the right thought. It's very necessary that you have the right thought. How do we come up with a thought? The very basic, the very origin. When you want to do something, you talk about something, you always have the thought in mind first. How does a thought arise? Do you want to analyze how a thought is arise? Because you want, in a meditation, you want to watch the arising, sustaining, changing, disappearing. A thought is always like that. Coming and going. But how is the thought created in your mind? You must know, otherwise, if you can't even know, if you don't even know how a thought arises in your mind, then what do? A thought of emotion comes up, you just react with emotion. You cry, you become revengeful, you become angry. You just react with emotions and you let the emotions carry you away. And you still think that you're right. Yeah, he shouldn't have talked to me in that way. He's stupid. He should have done this to me. You know, you always blame the others. You don't contemplate within. How does a thought arise? Let's very briefly examine how a thought. A thought could be wholesome or unwholesome or neutral. A thought arises in your mind. A thought comes up. That's the first origin, the first procedure. A thought comes up in you. And of course, you have to trace why such a thought comes up in you. The origin. The thought comes up from your subconscious is because you have seeds that germinate that thought. When I talk about seeds, it's not really just the seed of an oak tree, the seed of a flower, no. Seed is just a hidden energy in there. That thought has been accumulating through many, many lives. To people who have been practicing wholesome deeds all the time, the thought that comes up are usually wholesome because they've been cultivating wholesome seeds, wholesome hidden energy. So you have to be very careful with your nursery, with your field of thoughts. And because you have been accumulating all these, you've been reincarnating, a thought actually you can trace why such a thought comes up. But assuming that we just want to examine how a thought comes up, a thought arises, what's the next thing? When you are doing mindful meditation, you would notice the thought coming up, whether it is wholesome or unwholesome. You notice it is arising and you notice it is sustaining. But the observation of the thought in this procedure, in the second procedure, is vague, not clear. And it may arise and sustain without your notice. The thought may come up, you don't even notice it. I still hate that guy and that thought comes up in me in my meditation. Oh yeah, I'm going to have a meeting with that person. Now he owed me some money. And I'm just asking for my money back. I should bring my contract. He owes me $10,000. I know he's in difficulty, but I need the money back. I don't care. You know, it's a lot of thought in your mind. So it arises in you. It may arise and sustain without your notice. That's the second procedure. Some people noticed it, some people don't even notice it, and let the thought carry away. A misconceived emotions will come up. At this time, if you're practicing mindful meditation, the observation of the thought is getting clear. You come up to a second level where you can watch your own thought coming up and your determination to let go of that thought. That determination is clear. Have you been up to that stage in your meditation for those who have been here a number of years? Have you been watching your thought coming up and you can immediately let it go? Some people nod their heads and say, yes. Only when you are calm. But when you go out, somebody infuriate you, you don't let it go. Why is that guy so selfish? He's doing this to me. He's doing that to me. Because you've been habitually thinking in that way. So if you're mindful, then you know you're determined to let it go. So that's the reason why when you're meditating, you have to let go of what comes in. Remember, let what comes in go out. That is one of the method in meditation. When you're meditating, you could be thinking about the past, you could be thinking about the future, worrying about the future, attaching to the past, and you're thinking of the present. You let that all go. Because all these are thoughts coming up, you let that all go. Because when you are meditating, sure, all these thoughts will come back to you. You don't want to just kill it. Oh, gee, I have to stop all these things. Don't burn them so violently that you burn yourself. When a thought comes up, you want to burn it away and you're so eager, then some hatred arises in your mind. You hate these wandering thoughts coming up. You want to suppress them. You want to kill them. You want to kill these thoughts. Then on top of the thoughts coming up, you have another conception of killing those thoughts. I hate those thoughts. How come in meditation I have those thoughts? I must do something about it. It's terrible. I have a bad session in meditation. You start to hate. A hatred comes up in you to replace all these wandering thoughts. So you must, when a thought comes up, don't try to kill it. Just let it come and let it go. If you start to hate and eliminate those thoughts, you got into devils. That's what we call the devil's meditation. You thought you have a good meditation because you're trying to suppress them. But your suppressions instigate all the hidden energy of suppression in your nurseries. And all these seeds starts coming up. You don't even know about it. Some people are so determined. We have a friend in Hong Kong, and he started to learn meditation. He was really good at it. And every time when you say, I need a good session, all thoughts coming up, I push them aside. I just simply kill them. His breathing, a killing concept in mind. And as time goes on, he gets a terrible headache. And he gets very violent in his thinking. And he couldn't meditate anymore. So he gave it up. He just gave it up. And he said, terrible, but I didn't feel comfortable. Because that kind of feeling affects also his physical body. So you got to watch it. When we tell you that meditation will bring you peace and tranquility and joy and rapture and pity, it could be just the opposite. You're being dominated by the devil of violence, the devil of revenge, the devil of suppression. Next, the fourth level is your mindfulness of a thought is clear and you're determined to let go of it if the thought is unwholesome. This means that your mindfulness is effective and has become the right mindfulness. That's what we call become the right mindfulness. These four procedures, if you are mindful, applies not only when you're meditating, applies every minute, every second. Even when you're interacting with other people outside, you still have to watch your thought comes up. Learning the Buddhist teaching is not just coming for meditation and prostration and offering, it's learning how to contemplate your thought, how to nurture that. You start with a wholesome thought, and as time goes on, even the wholesome thought, you have to let go of it. Nothing remains. Even the wholesome thought, let go. Don't attach to wholesome thoughts. Okay, so that's what we mean by right mindfulness. And then we say, okay, how do we learn all these things? Mindfulness, how do I know I'm mindful? The Buddha's teaching, we need concentration, but how do I get about to practice Buddhism? Just give you a brief outline. So you really have to go the three courses, the basic courses of the Buddhist teaching: sila, samadhi, and prajna. Sila means precepts, samadhi means concentration, prajna means wisdom. Now, what is the sila? Jie, ding, hui. Precepts guard actions, speech, mind against unwholesome deeds and encourage wholesome deeds. So, if you want to learn a Buddhist teaching, you can say, I just remind myself to be a good man, a good woman. That's it. That's enough. As long as I'm doing good things. No, you really have to take on the precepts. Take on that responsibilities. Take on that instructions, directions, injunctions against vile, against bad deeds. You have to actually take the precepts. Like the monks actually take the 250 precepts. The nuns, the bhikshunis, have to take 348 precepts. And if you're a lay person, you take the three refuges, you have to take the five precepts. Abstain from killing, abstain from lying, abstain from sexual misconduct, abstain from intoxicants, and abstain from, what else? Drinking. Drinking is intoxication. Abstain from what? Stealing. You can say that, oh, as long as I remember that I don't steal in my heart, in my mind, I'm okay. It's not okay that way. You really have to have the ordination. You really have to bind yourself in doing it. It's different. Because if you are actually doing it officially, you are installing that alarm system in you with a professional. Imagine if you just fix put an alarm system yourself at home, it may not work. Get a professional to do the right job. You really have to take the ordination. You can say, I don't want to be a monk, I just practice the 250 precepts at home. That would be okay. Wouldn't be okay. Because there are certain procedures you have to follow. Jie, ding, samadhi, concentration. So put wandering thoughts under control and direct them towards right mindfulness and achieve stillness of mind. That's concentration. Now, after you have observed all these precepts, you have security guard, an alarm in you that would stop you from the crude deeds, crude speech, crude thinking. There's a crude level, superficial level. You need a deeper level, because the crude level, as I always using the example, a sila is just like what? Imagine your body is a country. The sila are the armies protecting you from suppression of other countries. You really have to have an armies, soldiers, to protect you. And then samadhi, concentration, what is that? If I use this example, is it sufficient just to have the armies, the soldiers, the navies, the air force to protect you, that's all? And then you can live happily in your own country? You need more. You're protected from outside attack, invasion. But how about the invasion inside? The citizens inside are always committing crime, killing, stealing, and all that. You need policemen. You need policemen inside that country. Not just the Air Force, navies, and soldiers, and all that. You need that policeman. That is the concentration. You need that policeman in you. Just like a policeman in the country. Inside. You got to keep the law in order inside. And what is prajna? Prajna is development of understanding and practice of the Buddhist Dharma, achieving purification of mind and nirvana. If I use this example, continue to use this example of a country, yes, you have the armies protecting yourself protection from invasion. Yes, you have the police, but the system of your government is terrible. A lot of corruption, undemocratic. You need a good system. That's the wisdom you have, the prajna that you have. You need to develop a good system inside that country. So if you have a good system, good policemen internally, good armed forces externally to protect you, here you live happily. That's just an example to you. And if we compare the Sila, Samadhi, and Prajna in relation to the six parameters, this is what how it looks like. The Sila, that means you practice giving, you practice discipline, you practice tolerance, and you practice diligence. You have to practice all that, the actual practice. And in the Eightfold Path, it means right action, right livelihood, and right speech. In other words, you have to practice the right speech, right livelihood, and right action. Those are the sila, the precepts, that guard you against bad action, bad speech, and bad livelihood. What do we mean by bad livelihood? If you're making millions of dollars and you're operating a casino that advocate and promote gambling, or if you are operating a red light district with that encourage people to have, you know, relationships and all that, you know what I mean by that, then you're not having the right livelihood. You're operating slaughterhouses that kill millions of cows and pigs every day, and you are operating, because you want to make a lot of money, you're operating a mink coat business that you kill a lot of minks, you smoke them alive, and you skin them, and one mink could be maybe 100, mink coat could be 100 minks being killed. You're always in the process of killing the seals in the Arctic alive, millions of seals. So you're not in the right livelihood. Okay, so what is samadhi if you compare that to the six parameters? Samadhi, you need meditation, tolerance, or patience, and diligence, exertion of efforts. And if you compare that to the Eightfold Path, it's the right mindfulness and right concentration and right efforts. You really need right efforts, diligence in every one of these courses, three courses. How is it related to the six parameters? Wisdom and diligence. So if you compare it to the Eightfold Path, it means right view, right thought. It's not easy to have the right view on things. You really have to listen to Dharma lectures. You really have to study the Buddhist teaching in order to have the right view. Many people have wrong views on things, the wrong thought on things. Samadhi and prajna, concentration and wisdom, is not a procedural practice. You do it simultaneous development. In other words, you don't say, I have my concentration first and then I have my practice my wisdom later. No, it's all coming together. Simultaneous development. Okay, now, some concluding remarks. We've been talking about mental factors in meditation. Right now, we are beginners. We have directed thought and evaluation. What is directed thought? You have an object of concentration. You create an object of concentration that is according to the Mahasatipatthana, the Anapanasati, the in and out breath. You're using that as an object of meditation. And then you, every time when you've done it, you evaluate it. Did I do it right? You evaluate it. And you want to make sure that you are doing it with the right mindfulness. So you are in the process of learning it. That's the learning process. You have directed thought, you already can do it, you're evaluating it, and then after you evaluate it, you correct all your errors. So it's very important that you have a guru, or if you don't have a guru, you really know how to correct your own mistakes. But most people, they don't like people to point out their mistakes. Why do you point out my mistakes? I'm okay, I'm good. How many people really like to listen to constructive criticism? No, they think that their esteem is being jeopardized. They like that. We all like that. You gotta have someone who points out your mistake. And sometimes they may be wrong. It's just like me. If I think that, well, you shouldn't do it this way, this way, this way, I may be wrong sometimes if I misunderstand you. But your attitude is, it does not matter. Someone be my guide. Someone who is telling me whether I'm really wrong or not, I know, but someone pointed out to me. That means I have an alarm, a rightful alarm in my mind that triggers the alarm and tells me what I shouldn't do. Okay, then when you are doing that right, you will have some comfort, pity. You have comfort in your meditation. And then if you really have this comfort, you're already in Kamadhatu Samadhi. Maybe you are in that area. You are still not in the jhana yet. This is the beginners in Samadhi. But you really have comfort. That means after meditating, you feel as if in every session, you don't want to leave your seat. You want to meditate for millions of years. You are so overwhelmed with tranquility that you feel very comfortable. And even sometimes you feel that your physical sickness have got improvement, and you will feel that you're a different person. Maybe your allergy is gone somehow, or maybe your temperament is improved. Maybe you're not as selfish. Maybe you're not as attaching to pleasures, to wealth, to reputation and fame. You know that because you free yourself of the bondage of material. You become more spiritual. That's comfort. You become more compassionate. You become more kind. You become more, what do you call that? Non-egoistic, altruistic. You become more altruistic. You become not easily agitated. You become more forgiving. That's comfort. You know. But on the other hand, if you always attach things and, oh, why does my guru tell me all these mistakes? And why is that guy doing this? No, this is not right. This is not right. This should be done this way. You always have the internal commentator telling you that other people are wrong. Then you are not in here. You're not in comfort. And then when you go on again, then you have this. You have all these four. You're improving. You have the direct thought evaluation, rapture. You have joys, preliminary and sporadic though. The rapture of joy is preliminary and sporadic. Your stillness of mind is preliminary and sporadic. Sometimes it comes and sometimes it doesn't come. So you're still not in the jhana. That is anagamya samadhi. These two are very difficult to arrive at already. Have you been here? Have you been higher level here? If you're in this level, you could meditate for 10 hours. You can meditate for 10 hours in tranquility. And you become a different person. And then as time goes on, of course, you are in the jhana. How many people are in the jhana? You have all these in the first jhana. Direct thought, evaluation, rapture, joy, and stillness of mind. And when you're in the second jhana, what do? Even these are burden to you. Direct thought and evaluation, they are burden to you. You don't need them anymore. You don't want them anymore. And when you get to the third jhana, even rapture is disturbing to you. When in your third jhana, you only have joy and stillness of mind. When you go into the fourth jhana, it's the time when you say that even the joy is disturbing. You only have just stillness of mind. So you're reducing all this. You're reducing your direct thought, your evaluation, your rapture, your joy, until you have stillness of mind, then you're in the fourth jhana. Now, this is a very high level. I just bring them out so that you understand what levels to go to. If you're on this level, you could have been a Sotapanna already. And if you're at this level, you could be an arahat. Where are you? Tell me in this level. These are the jhana level. Very, very high level. That's very, very high level. Now, well, I've finished all these mental factors in the jhanas, and I don't need to go in the level because I'm not qualified to talk about any higher level. I'm not even qualified here. You know, it's in the higher level, you don't even have to talk. The fact that I'm talking to you, we're both not at the higher level.